Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm the girl.
And this is Nerd Nuptial episode 60.
We made it.
60. Every time we hit like a 5 or a 0, I feel like it's cause for celebration. But that's every fifth episode.
That's so right.
I don't know if it's worth popping the champagne that much. But I'm excited about this week's episode because it's a show we're talking about. If you've seen the art, if you've seen the title, you know that we're talking about Fargo. And I've always been a big fan of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a little hesitant of watching the show.
Yeah. And I don't think I necessarily knew 100% what it was all about.
Yeah.
Like, people had recommended it, but
I was kind of like you. I didn't really research it. I didn't mm-hmm. look into it. I was just kind of like, oh, you know, it's just a TV show that's going to be drawn out based off of the movie. So, okay, whatever. You know, like, I'm not that interested. But then people kept talking about it and kept saying, like, I kept seeing all these awards that were popping up for it and all of these huge names were getting involved. And I was just like, wow, okay, maybe I should give this a shot. So, yeah, so this week we're talking about Fargo. But before we get into that, I want to tell, I usually like opening up the show with a little personal story. And this is about a little struggle of mine. that would not have happened to me if I was not a parent. This was a new type of situation that happened to me. And so we were out to lunch with a lot of your family not mm-hmm. too long ago. And we had the little one, we had Ripley in the restaurant. And this we asked them, they're like, hey, do you have a sling for the
car seat?
The car seat, thank you. And for those of you who don't know, it's this. It's just like a. It looks
kind of like a luggage rack.
Yeah, it looks like a luggage rack. Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like a luggage rack that you get at a hotel, but you put the car seat in it so you can eat with your baby, you know, like next to the table. And they're like, "Well, we don't have a sling, but some people just take a high chair and turn it upside down." And I was like, okay, well, let's check it out. And you were just like, no. Like, I was like, no, let's just check it out. And so she brings it out, turns it upside down. It is the wobbliest thing that I've ever seen. And you were just like, no, we're not doing that. And I look on it, and on the bottom of it, it has a little diagram of flipping it upside down with a huge red X over it. Where it just says, don't do this. Like, you know what this waitress is suggesting? Don't do it. And so you told me that you said, okay, well, go outside and get the stroller. You just now figured out what story I'm telling?
Yeah. So I was like, where are you going with this? Yeah.
So I walk out. I'm by myself, and we're parked kind of far away.
Yeah.
Because it was a Saturday, and there was lots of weddings going on at the venue that we were at. And so I walk out to the car, and I open up the trunk, and so I take the stroller out, and the stroller folds like most strollers do,
mm-hmm.
but it folds in half. Like, it doesn't like collapse like normal ones, like horizontally. It collapses vertically, and so when I pull it out, you have to swing it so that it locks open. And I inadvertently pull it out, and like, I don't use two hands. I use two hands. I use one at the top and one on the side. And as I swing it out, I don't remove my right hand. And so it is clamped shut over my right hand. Like, not my wrist and not my fingers, but my palm. So it's clamping my palm. And this is not like it's pinched and I can't move it. This is clamped hard, and I'm in constant pain, and I'm completely by myself, and it's not to the point where I'm like screaming or like I've been shot or anything like that, but it's enough pain where I'm just like, oh wow, things are getting dark. Like,
started passing out.
Like, well, no, I felt like I was gonna pass out, but I wasn't really. Like I was felt woozy. Yeah, like my body was asking the question. Like it wasn't literally getting dark, but like my body was just kind of like, is it gonna happen? Like am I gonna pass out in this parking lot? And I couldn't get the leverage to release it. Like what you have to do is you have to press a button and pull up of the center, and I just couldn't do it with my left arm, and I was kind of jutted down because I couldn't stand up straight.
Oh my god!
I know, it was quite the sight, but nobody was around, and I was like, "Am I gonna have to wheel this to the restaurant, which was super far away?" And I was like, I almost started laughing at myself because it hurt so bad. I actually pulled out my phone to take a picture because I thought it was so funny, but I couldn't take a picture because I couldn't even focus because I was like, oh wait, that's right, you stupid millennial, like you can't take a picture of this because you're in so much pain.
Oh my god.
And then I see a woman through a couple of cars, and I hate that I had to do this because I didn't want to yell at some random woman alone in a parking lot.
I was gonna say,
desperate times. And so I try to be as cordial as I possibly can. Like, I don't go like, hey, you over there, get over it. No, I'm like, excuse me, miss. Like, I even raise my voice just a couple of registers because I'm like, excuse me, miss, I'm in dire need of your assistance. And I was like, could you help me? And she's holding a toddler. And so
you're going to get so harassed for this. You realize that,
I know,
right?
I know. But I have to tell this story. I have to tell it. And so she's holding a toddler.
Oh, my God.
And he looks, this toddler, he looks like a kid that you would see on the cover of a fantasy novel. Like these blonde ringlets and just like these strong bone structure. And the kid's only like two. And I was just like, what is this kid? And so the mom comes over.
Who knows what you look like? You were almost blacking out.
It could have been delusional. Like, I thought I was seeing like Willow from the movie Willow. Actually, wait, no, not Willow. Laura Dunham from Willow.
Yeah.
And so she comes over. She's super nice. She can clearly see that I'm in distress because I look pathetic. I look absolutely pitiful. Because I'm hunched over, I clearly am only able to wave with one arm, and I'm possibly sweating because I'm in pain. And so she comes over and she's holding the toddler in her left arm. And I was like, yes, miss, as you can see, I'm in quite a lot of pain, and I can't get the leverage to unlock this. And she's like, oh, I'll absolutely help you. Well, because she's holding a toddler, she can't get the leverage either. And so she's pulling on it as hard as she can. And it's just hurting my palm even more. So I'm just going, you know, every single time she's trying to pull on it. And so it's freaking the toddler out.
Oh, no.
And the toddler starts screaming. And so she has to set him down. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry. It is all my fault. Everything that you're seeing is my fault. I'm sorry I'm making you cry.
I said that to him.
And so she still can't get it. She still can't get the leverage to unlock it. So I'm like, am I going to have to pull like a revenant and like chew my own arm off to get out of this thing? And I was just like, for some reason, I don't know why it took me this long, but it dawned on me. I was like, oh, wait, I'm clamped in a recall part. Like this, this stroller was like had a recall on one of its parts a couple of months ago. And it was like the day that we brought the baby home.
Yep.
The day after we brought the baby home, we got an email that said like, oh, yeah, you remember that super expensive, super quote unquote safe stroller that you got? Yeah, it's been recalled. And so they sent us some new parts. And so I didn't think about this, but I could actually remove that part. And so I just rip it off as hard as I can, and it releases my hand. And I just go,
oh my God.
In front of this random mom and toddler. And
you took a very long time. I was like, where is he?
Yeah, thanks for checking in on me. And so I was immediate release, and then I look at my hand, and there's just this permanent indentation that I had for a couple of days on my hand and a bruise. And then I'm like, okay, thank you so much. She's like, well, I didn't really do anything. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and helping me, even if, you know, like I helped myself out.
I'm not
going
to lie. If I was with Ripley and I saw a random man like yelling in the parking lot, I probably wouldn't come over.
But I was super cordial. What if the dude was super cordial?
I don't know.
No?
I'm not going to lie to you.
You don't know? I respect that. I do. I totally appreciate in this day and age.
I'm very glad that that lady attempted to help you.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I necessarily would. I hate to say it.
I was like, well, you might have not helped me physically, but you gave me comfort. And as we're walking, we're kind of walking at the same pace. And I'm like, I am embarrassed. And so I kind of up my pace a little bit so that we don't have to continue talking and conversation and everything like that. And so I just kind of rush. And then I sit down and you see the first thing out of your mouth was, what took so long?
Yeah, I was like, what is wrong with you? Why are you gone so long? You just went to the parking lot.
So yeah, I now have a fear of that stroller.
I know you do. I notice every time you get it out, you're a little bit more, I don't know.
I'm a little wary of it.
It's true. Yeah.
I'm scared it's going to bite me.
It's true.
And yeah. So this story has nothing to do
no, it doesn't.
With what
not
we're talking about.
Thing.
Not
just,
a single
just show
thing.
How pathetic you were in that moment. So there you go.
Oh, so before we get into Fargo, actually, we just this moment, we started watching casting JonBenet. On Netflix. And we're like 15 minutes in, and it could be one of the greatest documentaries I've ever seen.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to keep going or not.
About watching?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Like it's one of those. It was released on the 28th, and we're recording this on the 30th. And it's a Netflix documentary about the JonBenet Ramsey killing. Mm-hmm. She was a young 6-year-old mm-hmm. in 1996. Yeah, she was killed in 1996, and they suspected the parents of doing it. Mm-hmm. And it was in Boulder, Colorado. Big deal, national news. You know, like as big as OJ kind mm-hmm. of deal on TV. And so there was so much media speculation. It was a circus. You know, there was gossip. People were pointing fingers. There was a ransom note that they think was written by the mother, but she was never convicted. And so it was just this big to-do in a Boulder of 1996. And so this documentary, the reason why it's unique is that it's not just another, you know, retelling. It's not just a crime drama or, like, there's no voiceover. There's no title cards. Mm-mm. There's no connecting tissue. It's just audition footage of people auditioning for this quote-unquote documentary that they're making, portraying the JonBenet story.
Yeah.
And you get a little schadenfreude because these people are kind of making fools of themselves. Like, you get this feeling.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's footage, but it's very, I mean, it's very, I don't know how to say, like, it's chosen footage of these, like...
It is well edited.
Yes. It's like the crazies. They chose the crazies to keep in the documentary.
Because what they did, like, those are all local actors from Boulder, Colorado. Right. From the Boulder area. Mm-hmm. And so these people were, you know, lived it. They lived through 1996. Mm-hmm. And even though the title of the documentary is called Casting JonBenet, it has very little to do with actually casting JonBenet. It's really focused on the mother, Patsy, and the dad. I can't remember his name. But it's just what they do is you know what happened is that what they did was they went to Boulder and said, okay, we're making a documentary, and it's going to be a dramatization. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a dramatization of the JonBenet story. And so we need actors. And so we're going to audition local actors from Boulder, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And they said, they're like, yeah, but like, just, you know, we're going to be recording your auditions. And so we need you to sign this piece of paper that says we can do whatever the hell we want with the audition footage. And so we're going to ask you questions about the case just to get a feeling, you know, just to get a feeling. And you know that's what happened. And so you see these actors who will do anything for the part. Like, they dress up. Mm-hmm. And, like, one woman just says, like, oh, these are the earrings that she was wearing.
These are the
type of earrings that she was wearing in the Larry King interview. These are the pearls that she was wearing, mm-hmm. even though they weren't pearls. And just, like, these people, and they just said, like, it, as you watch the documentary, they start to reveal of, like, oh, I was dating the girl who was the business partner of the dad and blah, 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 blah. And so that's what crafts the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is these crazy people. These crazy actors who will do anything for a part, who actually live through it and also have connections.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think so far?
I don't know. I think it's a little painful.
It is. It's super painful.
It's really difficult to watch.
It's like watching season one of The Office. You just start burying your face.
You have more of a struggle with that than I do.
I do. I have a hugely adverse reaction to people who embarrass themselves on TV. I can't handle it. Like, I get embarrassed for mm-hmm. them. You don't have that.
No, not really.
I do.
But with these casting things, I think it's because as a director, I have to cast people at times. So it's just like, and you can tell that they were like, well, tell me, we just want to get a feel for you. Mm-hmm. So tell me about, you know, what happened to JonBenet. And so they're like telling, and, you know, some of the women are like, you know, trying to empathize. And, you know, it's very fascinating. It's more of like a human, like, interest documentary than anything mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. like these people who are willing to, you know, do whatever to get the part.
It feels more like it's an analysis of the gossip that happens around something like this.
Right.
Rather than the subject itself.
Right. And you're just not quite sure how these people feel about mm-hmm. the case, because are they just putting on this act to get the part? Like, mm-hmm. if whoever acts more crazy might get the part. So,
speaking of which, like, this this guy who's a legit cop...
He's auditioning.
Like, he's a real cop.
Yeah.
And he's auditioning. And he says, he's like, yeah, I've been a police officer, blah, 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 for 20 years. And at night, I'm a sex educator. And then it cuts. And both you and I were like, wait.
And I'm like, what sex education classes take place at night? Like, night school? Like, what?
Like, why would you?
Health at night?
Like, and if it's like people going through their GED, like, they don't need sex education because they're not high schooler students. Right. And then all of a sudden, like, they have a couple people in between, and then they cut back to him, and he literally has whips in his hands, and he's just showing them how to move them. And he said, he's like, yeah, you just kind of whip like this. It gives a nice light sensation on the breasts. And we're like, oh my God, he's that kind of sex educator. Oh my God.
I think he got the part too.
And he did.
That's what I was saying.
He got the part as the police chief. So, like, that's another thing, is that you see these little, like, little interstitials put in between of the actual dramatization. And you know that they filmed those just so that they could keep up appearances, saying, like, oh, yeah, no, we're legit auditioning
these
people.
That's how it feels. That's how it feels, yeah.
And so, yeah, that's the kind of crazy. And, like, there was also somebody else who was talking. She said...
Oh, yeah.
Total crazy eyes.
She's like, oh, yeah, well, the mom had her handwriting analyzed, but I've also had my handwriting analyzed. And it's just very fascinating because my ex-boyfriend had it analyzed and they could tell that I, like, broke my ankle by my handwriting. And I'm like, what?
She's like, yeah. And he had it analyzed from a birthday card that I wrote him. And never once answers, why did it get analyzed?
Right, like, why did you have your handwriting analyzed? Maybe she'll be the mom. We haven't gotten that far yet.
Oh my God, I hope so. And then you're like, she should hang out with the sex educator.
It's true, I did say that.
That would be an interesting time. Not a time I'd want to see.
No.
But interesting nonetheless. So, like we said, we haven't even finished it yet.
Yeah, I don't know. It's painful. So we'll see if we actually finish it.
It's like right up there with Grey Gardens. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's
rising the ranks.
Yeah, it is.
It's pretty good. okay, so you guys should check it out. It's fun. Interesting. And
I feel like it's good, like, late at night to watch.
Yeah, late at night. Don't be too invested.
No, like...
You could totally fold laundry while you watch it.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so Fargo.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some Virgo. Okay, so.
I have found myself speaking like the residents of Fargo or in Minnesota a lot.
True.
And we live in the Midwest anyway, so there's certain things that we have in our speech. Well, you always say I have it more than you, but whatever.
You have a Chicagoan accent. It's kind of different from Minnesota.
No, I know, but there's still those, you know.
Sometimes through the nose there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I was once talking with Lee Hutchison, who hosts Filibuster on the network at thenerdparty.com. He does I love his American accent.
I've never heard that. That's awesome.
It's not that great. I'm sorry, Lee. I mean, it's hilarious how he views Americans in his speech. I'm not trying to be mean. But it's as good as my Scottish accent. Let's just say
that.
There you go. Like, so we're being fair here. But I love it when he does it. And so I ask him to do it all the time. And so I asked him one time, I was like, dude, do your American accent. And he's like, well, what part? I was like, what part of America?
Yeah, that's true.
And I said, well, the Midwest. And he's like, oh, I don't know there. I don't know there, Tristan. I don't know if I can do a Midwestern accent. And I was like, that's what you think a Midwestern accent is? I was like, that is Minnesota. Okay, that is very different from Midwest. Like, yes, it's a part of the Midwest,
I mean, I think that's what people think about, though, if they are not from the Midwest.
Oh, you think so?
I think so. Oh, yeah, okay. I do.
Because, okay, this is gonna sound really self-centered, but I love researching accents and figuring out where accents come from. Like, I love to talk to people. Like, as I'm listening to someone, and if I hear a hint of something, I will ask them where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it probably sounds invasive, but we had a coworker leave us. It sounded like she died. No, she was she was leaving the office. She got another job. But she was raised in Minnesota.
Mm.
And I was just, but it was, it's just a hint there.
Okay. Certain words.
And yeah. This was while we were watching Fargo. And I was just like, this is fascinating. It's like I'm in the show. anyway, what was I talking about? Midwest. So they say that the most region-free accent in America, like what newscasters, like what you see on TV, like mm-hmm. when a newscaster goes on TV or that goes to national, they try to get a region-free accent. And what lots of people tell them to do is try to get a Midwestern accent because that's the most region-free.
Interesting.
Like if you go towards Illinois or Nebraska or places like that. And I'm just repeating what I heard, all I'm saying.
Interesting.
Because I tried to get rid of the little hints of my accent over the years. I tried.
You've tried, yeah.
Are you saying I did not succeed?
Well, I can't hear it. So how would I be able to judge it? Because I can't hear my own.
But we have different accents, though, so you can't hear mine, but I can hear yours.
You're just Tristan. That's all, yeah.
I'm just Tristan. You. You're just the girl.
Yeah.
Okay, I hear you. All right, well, anyway... So yes, Fargo takes place in Minnesota.
Wow.
And it's not just the accents. Yeah, we're going all over the place tonight. So it's based off of the movie. And actually, here's the thing.
Yeah, not really.
This is the thing for people who haven't seen it yet. Because when I was talking at that same lunch that it was with a coworker, my boss asked me, because I told him, I said, I was like, I'm watching Fargo and it's really awesome. They said, well, is it based off of the movie? And I said, no. I was like, well, why is it called Fargo? I was like, because it's kind of connected to the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like with season one, like I would have told you before I knew what season two was about or what season three was about. Like if you asked me, is season one based off the movie? I would have said it's based off of abstract shades of characters that are in the movie.
Yeah.
And then I get a dead faced look where they don't know what I'm trying to say. But now I can say with comfortability that it's not based off of the film. It's set in the same universe.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like
for sure.
For sure. I know. See, I've been doing that like all day because we've been watching too much of it. We've been like really marathoning.
Well, we watched it
show.
Hard.
Yeah. Like what? In 3 days we watched the two seasons.
22 episodes.
Yeah. 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 So that's a lot. So I feel like you're right. Like, there's certain characters that you're like, oh, that reminds me of. Mm-hmm. But it's not like a retelling or anything like that.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing. I was like, there's a character that is very evocative of Marge. Like, there's a female police officer.
In season one.
In season one, mm-hmm. who you think is going to become the chief. And then later on has even more elements of Marge that I'm not going to go into.
Right.
And so you're like, oh, that's like, she's like the Marge character and everything like that. But then you realize that, oh, this isn't based off of elements of the movie. It's just connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few things here and there that are like things that happen. I think the movie takes place in 87.
Okay.
Even though it was made in the 90s, I think if I remember correctly, it took place in the 80s. And then like you see there's one storyline where some money is left out in the wilderness with an ice chipper. Is that what it's called? An ice chipper?
Scraper.
A scraper. Yeah. Chipper. An ice chipper. That's not even a thing. There's an ice pick and there's a scraper.
Yeah.
But there's not an ice chipper.
No, there's not.
Yeah. So there's this satchel filled with money in the mm-hmm. movie.
It's a really briefcase.
Okay. Jeez.
Well.
So there's this satchel, you see, with an ice chipper. placed right on top of it in the white stuff that falls from the sky. Okay, the powder. Yeah.
Keep going.
So, yeah, okay, so you got the scraper that marks the location of the briefcase of money. And Steve Buscemi's character buries that. And we never know what happens to the money. In the TV show, we see what happens with the money.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing. That's how it's connected.
Very cool. Yeah. I like those little things. And so season one, has like a storyline. But then season two, we have like a connecting storyline.
Yeah. Like season one takes place in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2006. And it centers around a murder plot where there's a hitman involved. There's a murdered wife. And there is there's like some other connected murders. There's organized crime and everything like that. So right off the bat, I mean, like, it's different from the movie, because in the movie, it's a husband hires some not hitmen, but it hires some kidnappers to kidnap his wife so that he can get money from his father-in-law.
Yeah.
And things, of course, go sour.
Right.
And that's kind of the story of Fargo every single season, where somebody hires somebody to do something that's illegal.
Right. Or doesn't hire them. It just kind of happens, and then things go wrong. Like, just, it's just a domino effect.
Yeah, it's a domino snowball where one little lie, one little...
Domino wasn't good enough.
No, it wasn't good. Snowball was much better.
You wanted Snowball.
Okay. Because things get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Is it because I called you on satchel?
I was. It's connected to the scraper, the chipper, and the satchel thing altogether.
Continue.
So, this snowball effect...
Or domino, whichever.
The snowball effect. It, I totally lost my place. So, yeah, that's the whole thing, is mm-hmm. that... It's this one little illegality that happens at the beginning of the season. And then the entire rest of the season is how this plays out, of how this thing just goes absolutely crazy and out of hand and people die and things go like just go insane.
Right.
And there's the violence is usually very graphic.
It is very graphic.
Surprisingly so.
Yeah. It's harsh language.
Yeah. It's harsh language for FX, like no F words or anything like that. But. Actually, I think there was one or two slips. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Breaking Bad. There's like one per season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, we're trying not to spoil too many things.
Mm-hmm.
But Martin Freeman is the murder suspect. And this female officer is trying to investigate the murder of her boss, and as well as the murder of Martin Freeman's wife. And also there's this guy who had a hit job on him in the back of a strip club. And so she's trying to figure out how all these are connected. And of course, her male counterparts aren't listening to her. and they're like, it was done by a drifter. They're not mm-hmm. connected and everything like that. And so we see her journey, and we also see Martin Freeman's journey, because he's this meek little person, literally and figuratively. Where, like, Martin Freeman is a small man. He's not a large build or a large stature. But also his character is, like, he was bullied in high school. He's bullied in real life. His wife hates him. His brother is way more successful than he is. And he just is, you know, he's not a good salesman. And he gets no respect from anybody. And then just one day he snaps.
Well, you don't give too much away.
Well, no, I'm not going to give too much away, but just one day he snaps, but I'm not telling you how he snaps. And because he's suspected of some things are true, some things aren't, but, you know, you try to navigate that. And just right off the bat, watching season one, because we're going to get into spoiler territory later, and we'll announce it so that you guys can turn off the episode if you haven't watched it or caught up on it. But season one, gut reactions, first reactions, were you surprised? What's what?
I feel like season one was really solid storytelling. I feel like each season, though, I've noticed I feel like it could be like 7 or 8 episodes instead of 10. But I feel like season one really held my attention the entire time, and I really was invested in the characters.
Yes.
Even the characters that were bad characters, you like wanted to see where their storyline went. So I really enjoyed season one, and I think I would go back and watch it again because it was really solid storytelling. What about you?
I forgot to mention that Billy Bob Thornton is in it.
Oh yeah.
And I've discovered that I'm a Billy Bob Thornton fan. Like, it's weird. Like, if you asked me the other day, like, if you asked me before this, if are you a fan of Billy Bob Thornton, I'd be like, you know, he's fine. You know, whatever. You know, like, I'm not invested in his career or anything like that. But there's a lot of things I like of his.
I was going to say, I think that you don't realize it, but he has a solid career. And I feel like what he does is pretty good.
And my favorite Billy Bob Thornton movie is Bandits, which no one has seen but me. And I love that movie. He's with Cate Blanchett and Bruce Willis. And Bruce Willis and him escape from prison and then run into Cate Blanchett, and they become bank robbers. And it's like a weird version of Bonnie and Clyde that ends way better. anyway, neither here nor there. So he plays, Billy Bob Thornton plays the hitman, and he is super engaging, super intense, really interesting to watch, and just a fascinating personality. Like, he totally gives you this intense off-kilter vibe where you're just like, oh, I could totally see him be a hitman.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Oh, 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
He, you know, he's the wolf in the woods. And I think that was one thing. That was another thing that I really enjoyed about Fargo season one, is that you could tell a lot of thought and planning went into it.
Oh, yeah.
Every episode is connected. Like, they weren't just guessing as they were going on. Mm-hmm. It was a clear destination of where they're going to end up. References that happened in season episode one and episode two were paid off in 9 and 10. Mm-hmm. And everything in between. And it's like, there was things that made you think, like, there was a lot of parables, literal and figurative, where people, like, certain characters would say, like, oh, it reminds me of a story that I once heard, and they would tell you this fable and it would relate to the episode. And it did not sound preachy. It didn't sound out of character. It sounded like it was a part of the aesthetic. Which sometimes when people inject that, you're just like, oh, this is the writer loving their own writing. Like, this is not character driven. But as you said, these characters are very well drawn and very interesting. And even the people that piss you off in the season, you want to see more of.
Yeah, they do. And it's interesting because I feel like with the character development, even, you know, as certain times you're like, you can sympathize with the people who do bad things, but by the end you're just like, wow, you want to see certain people suffer because mm-hmm. of how far down the rabbit hole they've gone. So I also appreciated that the female lead wasn't the typical beautiful woman mm-hmm. that you could never imagine would be a cop, or like way too young to have the career, you know, that be considered for chief or something mm-hmm. like that. It was kind of nice to see more of like a real looking person in that role.
Yeah. It wasn't Kate Upton who was the chief of police in Minnesota.
Right. Like, thank you for not casting something like that. It was much more like realistic. Like, you know, she was, you know, a bigger set woman, which is nice to see on screen. And it was one of those things where you could just, you just really liked that character too. Like, she did a really good job in that role. And, you just wanted to see her do well.
Yeah.
Constantly.
And you were so invested in these characters, like, especially the characters that you liked. You were like, because that was one thing that I think this show gets right that not a lot of shows do, is that you never know who's going to die.
It's true.
I know, like, okay, Game of Thrones takes it to the nth degree, but screw that show. But with this one, it's never random killings. Well, that's not true. But I'm saying, like, the characters themselves, like the lead characters, if they die, it's for a reason, and it's not wasted. But at the same time, you never know if it's going to happen. So you have, it keeps you on the edge of your seat because you have no idea if your favorite character is going to die or
That's
not.
That's very true.
And, but it's not, like I said, it's not wasted. It's not random. It's for the story. But with the female lead, with Molly Salverson, you're like, I want to see her do well. And you better not do anything
it's true.
To hurt her.
Yeah, the entire time we were like, no, you can't touch her.
You're like, no, don't do it. Yeah, that's a sign of a good show when you're that invested, when you're talking to the screen, like you're talking to the filmmakers, like you're talking to the executive producer, the writer and everything like
it's
that.
True.
You're just like, don't do it.
Don't you mess with her.
But yeah, it was, I was so blown away by season one. I thought it was very enjoyable. And like you said, like it could be 7 episodes.
Yeah, 7 or 8, I feel like.
But at the same time, I don't think they wasted any episodes.
No,
there's a difference.
It just kind of extended the plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Season two, though, kind of bridging into season two, I feel like they kind of wasted certain episodes a little bit more. But it was cool because that one's set in
79,
and it's around, like, we know of an incident that it was referenced in season one, and
the massacre at
Sioux Falls. And so they are basically, you know, you're going to see what happened. Mm-hmm. So you know the entire season, like, oh, wait, I know about this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a massacre, so how is that going to happen? It's the same idea where one thing leads to another, and you know, just everything spirals out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I knew nothing, absolutely nothing about the show before we started watching it. And I didn't know that season two was going to be a prequel. I didn't know that it was going to be set even before season one. And so that was very interesting because right off the bat, you're like, oh, that's Molly's dad, but as a young man, you know, when he was in the state police. And like, oh, 79, why do we know that number? Oh, holy crap, Sioux Falls. And then you hear Sioux Falls reference, you're like, oh my God, we're going to see the Sioux Falls massacre.
Right.
And so even though you know where things are leading, even though you know that, like, almost everybody's going to die, like it's Shakespearean, it's still fun to watch because you know certain characters are going to survive because you're going to see their older counterparts in season one. But you still don't know how they're going to get there or how these side characters or these characters you've never seen before.
Yeah.
If they're going to die.
And there was something comforting about knowing that certain characters would survive.
Yeah, it was.
It was kind of like you didn't feel as guarded where you're like, oh, don't you hurt that person because you knew they would be okay. So, and you also knew that certain people from the very get-go, you knew, like, they did not survive. So you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it too, but I feel like there was more gaps where I was kind of like, okay, not as well executed. But I feel like it might have just been the storyline, and I feel like I was more invested with the season one characters than the season two characters, even though it was still good.
Yeah.
Did you feel that way?
No, yes. I felt the same exact way where I was in, like, I was fascinated by Martin Freeman's character and Billy Bob Thornton's character and Molly and even Colin Hanks, even though he pissed me off because he was inept and frustrated me, he was still interesting
likeable,
to watch.
Likeable, yeah.
He was likeable. That's the thing. He's the likeable character. That's Colin Hanks' career. But with season two, I didn't really have any characters like that. It was pretty much like you like the two male leads. You liked Lou Salverson, who was the protagonist, mm-hmm. the male lead, and then you liked the Lou Salverson's father-in-law, played by Ted Danson.
Right.
Just because they're nice guys. You know, they're nice cops in Minnesota.
But they, I didn't feel men. As connected to them as I did with, like, Molly's character mm-hmm. or anything like that. I feel like I felt more connected or frustrated, whichever, with Kirsten Dunst's character and her husband. I can't remember.
You felt connected to them?
Well, I felt more invested in their characters. And maybe it's because I knew that, you know, Salverson was going to survive.
Could be. So with season two, like, what happens is that there's this triple murder at a Waffle Hut. And so they're investigating it. And somehow, because of one bad decision, it was a doozy, but because of one bad decision made by Kirsten Dunst's character, she sweeps herself up into this gang war.
Yeah.
Between Kansas City Mafia and the Fargo Mafia. And she brings her husband into it, who's a butcher, and all, like, he's this simple Minnesota man. He's a butcher. He wants to buy his butcher shop from his boss. That's all he wants. He wants kids and to buy the butcher shop. And she has this wigged out 1970s hippie, like, self-actualization. She keeps talking about how she wants to be the best me that I can be. And she collects travel magazines and beauty magazines. And she's basically a hoarder. And it's just one whopping bad decision that just ultimately gets people killed. And you drive on the wrong side of the road, and then all of a sudden you're in a gang war.
Right. Exactly.
With all these people from multiple cities and multiple states. Mm-hmm. And that's the story. And
it's part of, like, the cover up of, like, you know, trying to get out of the trouble, mm-hmm. but just kind of making it worse. And it was interesting, though.
And also, both of these seasons, season one and season two, like, this is a black comedy. This is black humor.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And this is dark humor, dark comedy.
That's the best part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what makes this an interesting watch, that it's not melodrama. Mm-mm. It's not over the top, like, overwrought. There's no monologues. There's no tears. There's no anything like that. There is crazy murders and crazy violence and weird sex and not so much that. I might have oversold that.
I was gonna say,
there's some weird stuff in there, but it's not focused on. They're not cracking jokes, but they find the humor in, like there's a hostage scenario in season two, and right when the husband comes in, Kirsten Dunst has this guy tied up, and he's like, hey, buddy, just so you know, your wife's crazy, okay? She's insane. She's lost her mind. Don't leave me alone with her. You know, like, and you're just laughing your ass off.
Yeah.
Even though that this is a really messed up situation.
Right.
And so that's the thing, is that they find a way to find the humor in these horrible situations, and that's what makes it tolerable to watch. That's why you're not stressed out or exhausted at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate that.
I don't think it overthinks it. It kind of just tells the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 So we started watching season three. Only two episodes are out so far.
Mm-hmm.
And this one takes place in 2010, which is the latest of this anthology. That's another thing. Yeah. It's like, this is an anthology series, even though it's all connected to the same town or the same themes.
Right.
You're not getting the same actors.
Yeah. New cast. And
yeah. It's a new cast every time. But it's not like American Horror Story, where it's the same actors playing different characters or anything like that. It's just, no, this is things connected to Minnesota and Fargo and the theme of murder and betrayal and mafia and organized crime and everything like that. And like little bad decisions, you know, snowballing to larger ones. Like, that's the theme. All with a Minnesotan accent. So with season three, it takes place in 2010, and Ewan McGregor is the male protagonist, but he's playing two characters. He's playing a set of twins.
Yeah.
And I completely forget
It's true.
That it's one actor playing two roles. Like, even though it's Ewan McGregor has a very famous face, we all know Ewan McGregor.
Absolutely.
He one guy has curly hair and is successful and trim, and then the other twin is losing his hair and overweight, and it's just he plays it so well that you forget that you're watching camera trickery.
It's true. It's very true. Yeah, it's fun to see that, and he does it so well. I think that's the thing, is like they're definitely two unique characters, and mm-hmm. so when you're watching it, you don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with Fargo style, you know, the twin, like the less successful twin, decides to get back at his brother in a very, very simple way. Like, just supposed to be a simple home invasion and steal something, just something little. And at the beginning of the episode and beginning of the season, you're both like, oh, this is the decision.
Right. It's going to go horribly wrong.
That's going to go horribly, horribly, horribly wrong that we're going to watch for the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And it does.
Yes.
And Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in it? I don't know. I can't remember. I'm blanking right now. Like David Thewlis? I don't know how to pronounce his name. He's in it. But already, like, we're already getting a lot of actors. I mean, Ewan McGregor, actually, I think that's what prompted me to watch season one of Fargo.
Knowing that Ewan McGregor was going to be in season three.
Yeah, I heard. I was like, oh, Ewan McGregor is going to be in season three. Ewan McGregor is going to be in a TV show. That's pretty cool. Maybe I should give this a shot. Well, we got to start with episode one, season one.
Of course.
Yeah. So, yeah, and so we're only two episodes in. Can't really give it a judgment.
No.
You know. Can't give it a thumbs up or thumbs down.
Right,
yet.
It's too early.
I mean, these two episodes are fine. I mean, I'm not blown away. Like, the first episode of season one was amazing.
Yes, it really hooked you. I feel like, there was, maybe we're just judging it, though, based on, like, the level of violence. Because this one doesn't have quite the same level of violence that the season one and two had in their first opening, episode. But I don't know. That's just the fact that it's Ewan McGregor. I think we'll definitely give it, you know, the rest of the season. It's nice that it's only 10 episodes, too.
It is nice. I'm liking that trend. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's much tighter storytelling when you know you have a limited amount.
Yeah.
Like the people know that they can't waste time. I feel like you had that when you had 22 episodes. And sometimes even when you had 13 or 16, you're just like, oh, well, we can have a few throwaway episodes in there that we can slack off. But no, not with this, not with 10, definitely not with 8, with some other shows like True Detective. But, I was blown away with the first episode of season one, and, season two actually got higher ratings than season one.
Really?
Yeah. I like season one was applauded and got a lot of awards and was high marks. I think it was like 90 something on Metacritic or Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. But season two was pretty much 100%. Like,
wow.
Everybody loved season two.
Hmm.
And I was surprised by that because I thought, like, season two is not bad.
No.
But I loved season one way more than season two.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
I definitely did. Yeah.
So, actually, you know what? We're reaching 50 minutes, and I don't think we need to go into spoiler territory.
No, I mean, we gave a little bit away, but, you know, it's one of those things where you'll watch it and there's a lot more to be told.
I think like the biggest thing that we gave away was that there was a triple murder at the Waffle Hut, but you see it coming, like, you know it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And you, like, with Martin Freeman, you know he's gonna do some bad stuff, but we didn't tell you what he's gonna do, so
right.
Yeah, so we didn't give anything away, we didn't spoil you from anything. Definitely thumbs up, check it out. Like, this is like, you and I have been waiting for a good anthology show because we were totally burned by True Detective, just like the rest of the country, because True Detective season two was so bad that they're like, I don't think we can do a season three. it broke these creators where they're just like, we can't do this anymore.
Oh man. Yeah, but it's nice to have a good anthology, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Me too. All right, well, thank you everybody for listening. Please subscribe and please tell your friends. Like, really, if you like the show, I know that this is the point where most people turn off the episode because we go into our normal spiel. But if you're listening to us right now, tell your friends about Nerd Nuptial and about the Nerd Party at large. I mean, because no matter how much we promote on Facebook, no matter how many ads we do, or no matter how many posts that we do on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that, the only way that this show and this network grows is if you recommend us to your friends, to your family, tell them to check us out, because we love doing this and we love hearing from you guys. And the more fans we get, the more listeners, the more fun that this gets. And speaking of which, please write us at thenerdparty.com/contact. You can fill out the form there. Send us a question. Tell us what you thought of Fargo seasons 1, 2, and 3 so far.
Yeah.
Or what you thought of the JonBenet casting JonBenet documentary, or what you would like to hear us talk about in the future.
Yeah.
Like you can find us on Twitter at @joinnerdparty. You can find me personally at @theinsanerobin. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And also, please, if you like the show, give us a review on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star review, we'll mention you on the show.
I love you.
I know.
What a day. If that was me, I would have killed that man. If you don't stand up to the boss, the wife, you're just gonna get washed away.
You okay there, Bill?
Wife made spaghetti for dinner.
Seemed a shame to barf it up.
Gambling problem, I heard.
You don't say.
I heard drugs.
I heard he like slept with a 13.
For Pete's sake, Bob, don't spread rumors. No, I was gambling.
I'm glad my husband's dead. I'm gonna sing at his funeral.
La 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 la.
It's a bit strange, huh?
You think this could be like an organized crime thing?
Give me the money.
Oh, I'm sorry. Scrunion?
I didn't do nothing. I just got home.
Fargo, an FX original series. Tuesday, April 15th.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.